You're listening to Fascinating Women with Mark Lori. And now, Mark Lori.
Hello, everyone. It's Mark Lori here from Fascinating Women. Usually I'm behind the camera for Inner Spirit Photography, but today I have Lisa.
Liza.
Oh my God.
It's all right.
Well, listeners, I've been messing this up for a long time. I knew I'd get on here and do a thing for it. Liza, actually, we're going to start again. I'm sorry. We're going to have to take
it. Okay.
Liza. Hello, everyone. It's Mark Lori here from Fascinating Women. Usually I'm behind a camera at Inner Spirit Photography, photographing pretty amazing women. But today I'm, of course, talking to some fascinating women. And Liza Lomax is my current hot seat guest. Actually, it's not really a hot seat. She's really a pleasant kind of girl. And Liza's been on a really, I had a conversation before we started, and she has got a very interesting life journey that has accumulated and are doing some coaching, helping people out. So welcome, Liza.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
That's delightful. It's delightful. So tell us a bit about how you sort of frame your childhood, I guess, into what's happened today.
Right. So why I do what I do. So first off, I'm a body image coach. And so I help women love their bodies and love themselves. So I take them from that self-loathing to self-loving and show them that it's not selfish, it's self-preservation, because we really have to love ourselves and we really have to take care of ourselves before we can take care of anybody else or love anybody else around us. Mm-hmm. And as women, we're told at a very, very young age that we have to look a certain way. We have to dress a certain way. We have to be a certain way. Society says that we have to, you know, we have to do these things. And, you know, our environment says these things. And so it creates this not good enough story, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then it, you know, it carries us into teenage years and then to adult years where we're completely messed up in the heads. I mean, as women, we're completely messed up in we really are. I mean, it's more prevalent in women than it is in men, because I know that there's some men that do have body image issues, but it's really prevalent in women. And so my childhood, so I came from, there wasn't a lot of love in it. There was not a lot of self-compassion. There wasn't a lot of, it was very verbally, mentally, and physically abusive. And my mother suffered from mental illness and still does to this day. And so the whole concept of learning to love yourself, learning to love myself, I never learned. And I grew up being a caregiver and a doormat and a people pleaser. And I grew up taking care of everybody else around me. And I never took care of myself. And as a teenager, I suffered from two EDs. I had anorexia, and I went from one end of the spectrum to the other. And by the time I was 26, I weighed 300 pounds. And here I'm 300 pounds, and the doctor, I had no love for myself. I didn't care. I created this barrier around myself and, all the emotions and everything that I was feeling. And the doctor's telling me that I'm going to die if I didn't lose weight. And at the time I had a 2-year-old, and he's now 19. I know I don't look old enough to have a 19-year-old, but yes, I have an adult child. So anybody who watches this later will be like, how old is she? But anyways, yes, he was 2 at the time, and basically telling me that I wasn't going to live to see him turn 5. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, I'll lose the weight. So in 13 months, I lost 105 pounds.
Wow.
Yes. However, I didn't change my mindset. And so I continued to yo-yo. And the thing about going into anything in life, whether you're losing weight, whether you're in a relationship, whether you're starting something, if you don't change your mindset prior to going into that, you will continue to yo-yo over and over and over. And I learned that lesson quite a few times in my life, is yo-yoing all the time. You know, I tried every diet pill, every diet fad, everything out there I tried. I mean, I've been there, done that. I'd go through the magazines and I'd be like, oh, I haven't tried that one. I'm going to try this one. You know, I'd lose and I'd gain. I lose and I gain and I lose and I gain. And so about 5 years later, I hit rock bottom. And I was addicted to diet pills. I was a heavy drinker. I did things to my body nobody should ever do to themselves. I was sexually assaulted at one time. I'd had an abortion at one time. There was just so many things that pounded me into the ground. And I literally did not want to be here anymore. and I didn't think that I deserved anything. And I really, you know, like I said before, I was I was a doormat. I was a people pleaser. You know, I was the caregiver. I took care of everybody else. I never took care of myself. And so I really just, I hit the rock bottom. And whether you believe in God, higher source, divine power, whatever it is you believe in, I really believe God was just telling me that I needed to change and something had to give. And so I really took a had to take a step back and really like looked at myself and be like, okay, well, how do I love myself? How do I learn how to do this? I have no idea.
So you're up at this stage. So, because that's where a lot of people, like that's where the dividing line is when people say, okay, this is rock bottom. And then some people just kind of wallow there. And that rock bottom is different for different people. So What gave you, what did you draw on to say, I've got to change and actually create the change? What was the strength that you found to do that?
You know, I just always had this knowing, and I've had a knowing of myself, you know, since I was a child. I have an intuitive gift. So I'm very intuitive. I've been a medium since I was 5 years old. So I've, you know, I've been able to see people that have crossed over. I've had intuitive dreams. I've had prophetic dreams. I just always had this knowing that something's going to happen. Something's got to give, something's going to change. And I just felt like even the smallest little piece of me was like, there's got to be something more to this life. There's got to be something. There's got to be some reason why I'm here. There's got to be some reason why I'm, you know, why I am the way I am, or and I know that there's got to be people out there that maybe I can help. You know, I learned this a little bit later down the road once I started going through my transformation, but there was just always a part of me that was like, I knew something. I knew I had to change. I knew something had to give. And, you know, taking that step back and realizing, okay, this in this game of life, we have to learn how to love ourselves. How do I learn how to love myself? I'm like, I have no clue, you know, I don't know. And so I went out and studied every self-help book, every guru, you know, everybody out there, anything that I could get my hands on that, you know, that showed me, how gave me some sort of direction.
Yeah. Do you have one that's more of your, what you call it, a mentor for you? Not what you actually connected with, but you step back and say, okay, that guy's words or that woman's approach is what I'm going to model on. Everything else is kind of supporting of it, but here's one person I'm going to role model on. Is there someone like pull that role for you?
It was just a combination of a bunch of people. You know, I really, Deepak Chopra was a huge person that I followed a lot. Brene Brown was a person I followed a lot. Oprah of all people. I love Oprah. Who doesn't love Oprah? Later on, there was another person that was Jen Sincero. She has some great books out there that are called How to Be a Badass. And she just tells it like it is and just says it like it is and just very blunt and honest about things. And, you know, I'm always priding myself on being honest and being authentic and being real and raw myself. And so I really resonated with that. And, So I went and I studied everybody, and in the process, you know, I got certifications in a bunch of different things: NLP work, life coaching, personal training, holistic nutrition, a bunch of different things. I also have different modalities. Like I do energy healing work and intuitive work. And, cause I wanted all these tools. I knew I needed all these tools in my toolbox so that I could help other women. So right. I had all these tools to help other women, whether they had the same story or had a story or, you know, suffered from the same things that I had to deal with.
So when you're acquiring the tools, was that like a natural thing, or did you read the books and go, oh, I can do what they're doing. I can do what they're talking about. Cause like to my way of thinking, some people hit rock bottom and say, okay, I've got to change. And it's a bit of a leap to go from I've got to change to I'm going to help people change. Cause that's a whole new, like as you're doing this whole arc thing, for a lot of people simply struggling out of I'm going to change and have a wholesome life, I'm just going to kind of get by, to where, oh, okay, so I've changed. So when you did your change, was it with the intent of helping other people's lives, or you think, I'll fix this first, then you evolved into helping somebody?
Yep, I need to fix myself first. I think that that's everything in life. We need to fix ourselves first before we help anybody else. However, I was helping other people in different things because I've been a life coach for a while. So, I mean, I was helping other people in other aspects. But really, what do they always say? The coach needs coaching too. And there's always something that comes up. We're onions. We have layers. We're always peeling off those layers. And so, you know, once I started telling my story, then other people were resonating with that. And other people were like, oh, you should be doing that. You should be helping other women do this. You should be helping other women go through this and in this process.
How useful is it, do you think, in general, for people to tell their story? Like not because they want to speak or change people's lives, but just to be able to say to the world, to friends, to family, this is my story. Is that a valuable thing for people to do?
Yes, very valuable. You don't know who you can touch. You don't know who it needs to hear that. You don't know what part of your story. Somebody might be hitting harder rock bottom than you are, and you just say one sentence or one word out of that, and it resonates with them so much that they're like, I need to change. I'm like, words are powerful, and you never know what you say or how you say it that can change another person's life.
So when you tell your story, is the intent to help affect somebody else's life, or is it as healthy for you to tell your story?
Both. Yeah. Cause I mean, I've told it so many times, and I'm like, and I still, I'm like, wow, I really can't believe how far I've come. I really can't believe how much I've accomplished and how much of myself I found again. And then telling my story and having other people affected by it. And they're like, oh my gosh, that's my story. That's like, you know, I need your help, you know, like fix me, help me.
When someone tells a story, is it a short dialogue kind of thing? Like, so we're just trying to, we're talking to the audience who's maybe thinking, oh, how do I tell my story? Like, do I need a platform? Do I have to make it a long dialogue? Is it, give us some hints how they can tell their story.
It depends on what kind of way you're presenting it. If you're like, say, I'm just going to use an example. If you're in a conference and you're doing a talk or something like that, you know, when I get up on stage, I always tell my story first and then I do my talk. And, you know, it's very powerful to tell your story. And like I said, you don't know who might be in the audience that might be affected by that. So, you know, telling your story, you can make it as long or as short as you want it to. It's however, whatever feels, you know,
what other kind of
comfortable, I guess.
The majority of people aren't going to be speaking or on a platform where that's part of the arc of the presentation for it. Where would they, what kind of form would they do for that? If it's just talking with friends, do you tell your story, or how do you do a moment to get it out? What's a first step?
You know, Facebook, you can, you know, tell your story on Facebook. You can do a YouTube video. You could, you know, if you're involved in, like, say I'm involved in a couple networking groups, and I go and speak at the different chapters of those networking groups. And, you can go and do that. You can do speaking engagements. You can speak on any of the platforms. I mean, you can, you know, whether it's a written out story or whether it's a video story, like a vlog, you could start a vlog, which is a video blog, or do a YouTube channel and do a series of videos. I mean, there's so many avenues of where you can get your story out on that. There is endless options. There really is.
As well. And you said you're a medium. How does that, do people go, oh my God, just, you know, don't read me. How's that entwine your life? Because it's sort of a mythical kind of thing, but you know, Hollywood's taken it and turned it into a very unusual kind of creature. So how does that entwine your life with how you react to people?
You know, nobody has ever, when I was younger, yes, I had to keep it a secret because I grew up in a very religious household. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a no-no, like that's the devil, that's evil. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I was an adult, till, you know, I was able to like you know, really like come out of my shell and talk about that. And, you know, at first people were like, oh no, you know, like, oh, very leery about it. But majority of the people around me were like, whoever was around me and was supportive and was whoever resonated in my energy really just got it. They're like, oh yeah, I don't have a problem with that. You know, it's like, oh, you want to do a reading for me? Sure. Okay. You know, or do you see my great aunt Harriet, you know, standing behind me? I mean, I don't know. I mean, so it wasn't like, I didn't really have a lot of, you know, like issues with people thinking that like, oh no, don't talk to me about that. Or, oh, I don't want to know about my future or anything like that. And, I never really experienced that.
That's cool. I had a client in and she could also see bits of people's futures and odds and ends. She was from Eastern Europe, and I can't recall the country, but the only people who were allowed to actually be mediums and ply the trade was gypsies. Mm-hmm. And if you weren't a gypsy and you had the ability, you just didn't do it. There's vast repercussions to it. And so she, when she came over here, so she took up electronics, became a coder. And her mother went great lengths to kind of keep that quiet. She came over here and she discovered that it's much more accepted over here. You didn't have to belong to a particular sect of society to be able to do it, which is kind of wild.
Yeah, yeah. And more people are more, if you've never experienced anything like that, you're very leery about it. But majority of people have had some sort of, you know, experience, whether it's like an intuition or whether just a knowing or something happened and they're like, they can't explain it. They don't understand, you know, or they had a loved one come and visit them in a dream and that felt so real. And I'm like, well, because it was real and you did actually see your relative. So, but most people nowadays have had some sort of experience. Mm-hmm. They can't really explain it.
Yeah. The unexplained. What would be a perfect day for you? If you wake up one day and go, this, at the end of the day, this would have been a perfect day. What would that look like?
Oh, perfect day. A perfect day would be, I would be able to sleep in until whenever I wanted to get up. I probably would end up getting up about 9:30, 10 o'clock. And that would be really sleeping in because normally I get up about 6:30. So sleep in, kind of take my time, maybe get a workout in. Maybe just kind of, cause I meditate. So do like maybe a longer session of meditating, go for a swim. I live on a lake. Mm-hmm. Maybe soak in the water for a while, just kind of hang out, maybe go for a boat ride. And, what else would I do? Maybe have a bonfire and just kind of hang out with the people that I love. And then maybe, you know, watch the moon. I mean, I'm pretty simple. It's like, I don't have any grandiose things.
So what three beliefs guided you through the years? Like if you sit back to core beliefs that you go, oh, this is my North Star. What would they be?
Here are my beliefs. Oh, goodness. Oh, you're asking some good questions. Wow. Beliefs. You know, when I had my transformation, one of my beliefs was, you know, being authentic and being real and being me. And so I pride myself now on being authentic and helping other women find their authenticity and finding, you know, who they really are and what they are really about and what their purpose is, what their mission is here and why they're here. So I would say my authenticity. Mm-hmm. Another core belief. Oh goodness. Wow. Really put me on the spot here.
I told you.
There's so many things. I know there's so many things that I could, you know, I could, oh goodness. I'm like, can I come back to that one? I'm not back sure.
We will come back to that. So what's your biggest dream? What is something you just, when you look back and say, I accomplished that, what would that be?
My biggest dream? Going forward, my biggest dream would be to be with my family. I know that we talked about this before. And I'm a Danish American. So, and for a huge part of my life, my heritage was taken from me and was I thought was taken from me. And I came to find out that I'm always been a Dane. Once a Dane, always a Dane. And I don't have to go through the same process that most people have to go through. I just have to have like it has to be reinstated kind of my citizenship. But I ended up relearning the language again too, as well. But that would be my long-term dream, my goal would really to be back with my family over in Denmark. Goal for like,
A legacy thing.
Just really being that support for people. And I'm a good listener. Mm-hmm. I've always been a good listener, and I've always been a good advice giver. Mm-hmm. And you know, when I listen to people, I really listen to them, and I don't like listen to talk, you know, like how most people do is like we listen to say the next thing. But really listen to them and really hear what they're really saying and like just be there for them. And I always like a lot of my stuff when I do a tagline, I always say, I'm here for you. That's always my thing is I'm here for you, whether it's, you know, mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally, I'm always there for that person. And so they know that they can turn to me. So even when I'm not here ever again, you know, I'm always here. I really am always here, and I'm always in their heart.
That's pretty good. What's the most spontaneous thing you've done? You just surprised yourself when you did it.
Most spontaneous thing I've ever done. So I took a trip with my son, 5 years ago. And I've always like had this, I love roller coasters. I love like the thrill. I love the excitement about things. I love roller coasters. Like I could ride on roller coasters over and over and over again. And I always wanted to go, zip lining. Mm-hmm. And, but I was nervous about it. I'm like, you're way high up, you're strapped to these things. Are they going to hold you? Are they going to, you know, are you going to be safe while you're doing this? Yeah. It's like, we did it. It was actually through, the Ozarks, mm-hmm. and it was the most amazing experience ever. It was just beautiful, freeing. It's like, you feel like you're flying through the air. I get goosebumps when I talk about it. It's very freeing.
Yes. We went down, there's one in, I think it's the biggest one in, I think somebody said North America. It's got, I think 17 or 22, stop stations all the way down the mountainside.
Oh,
actually
wow.
Go to this massive gorge. And we had a storm coming in. The guy says, if we don't get down to number four, then you have to walk down. Like it's a long, it'll take a half day to get down. So we were going pretty quickly, but yeah, you're hanging out over this. I think in one case we were about maybe 500 feet above the floor, maybe not that high, but it was impressive.
Yeah. We were on a road trip and we're just like,
camera.
Oh, you dropped your camera. Oh,
fear of dropping my camera.
Oh, fear of dropping your camera.
It was pretty wild.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, we had just gone for a road trip and we're like, we saw it and we're like, hey, do you want to do this? And he was like 13 and he's like, let's do it. And I'm like, okay, let's do this. So yeah, it was spontaneous. It's like, let's just do this. Let's go.
Do you have any inspirational quotes you live by that you kind of hang on to you?
No, not really. I use a lot of affirmations. So I'm big onto the I am. So mm-hmm. I am, and whatever you put in, you know, behind that is very powerful. It's like I am are the two most powerful words in the English language, because anything you put on the other side of that has a huge negative or positive effect in your life. Mm-hmm. You know, if a woman is saying, for instance, is saying, I am ugly, I'm ugly, I'm ugly. Well, she's going to look in the mirror and see nothing but ugly. You know, versus if you say, you know, I'm beautiful, you know, I am gorgeous, it makes you sit up a little bit better. You know, your shoulders go back, your eyes are a little bit brighter, you have a smile on your face. So anything that says I am and a positive
thing,
you know, afterwards is huge.
Photography, like we'll go through a session and we'll say, like, amazing. And the girl said, oh yeah, but have you noticed? And then they'll talk about a droopy eye, or they'll pick things apart, right? I go, you know, you're always a salesperson. And if you keep on telling people to give you compliments that, no, you're ugly, you're not as pretty as you're saying, so eventually your sales campaign is going to work and they're going to go, gosh, I think you're right. You are pretty ugly.
Right, right.
And you will have convinced them that indeed you're ugly. And they go, oh, I had not seen that coming. I should maybe not sell that pitch. I said, yeah, so you know, that's hard for people to take compliments, isn't it?
It's very hard for people to take compliments. It's, you know, especially women, you know, we're, you know, I mean, you know, I say this a lot. It's like, okay, say you have this, you went out and bought this dress and you've had it for a while and you put it on and you go out and somebody says, hey, that's a nice dress. And you're like, the woman's like, oh my gosh, no, this is really old. It's really faded. It's just, it doesn't fit me right. I'm like, oh, I've got, you know, I got to lose some weight or, oh, I just don't feel comfortable in it. Blah, 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 blah. Just say, yes, thank you. I love, thank you for liking me in this dress. You know, I mean, it's like, we have such a hard time accepting compliments. We have such a hard time being receivers because we're set up right away to be givers and that's it. Give, 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 give.
And we're conditioned to not make ourselves stand out. I was at a course at the time, what they had us do, we had a line up and we'd have people and we'd have to say something nice about the person in front of us. And then they couldn't say anything else but thank you. And so this went on for like 10 minutes and there's people afterwards that were struggling. We'd see people, come with me. And they'd sit down and this one guy was really worried about this girl who was really down herself. And he said, okay, the next 15 minutes, here's what we're going to do is I'm going to give you compliments for 15 minutes. All you can say is, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you the whole time. And but you can see her whole posture changes as she started to acknowledge, because that's when somebody gives you a compliment, you acknowledge it, tells your body you agree with it. And it has that impact onto it, which is really kind of huge. The other thing I've just thought of is that when someone gives you a compliment and you turn it down, you're suggesting to them that their opinion is bad.
Yes.
You know, and so it becomes, when you turn a compliment down, it's a two-edged sword. You're beating yourself up, but you've also told the other person, I don't like your judgment. I think you really can't make a good judgment if you think I'm good looking in this dress, nicer, whatever it kind of happens to, which is, a lot of people don't think of that particular angle, but it's.
Yeah, when it's the same. Yeah, when you say negative things about yourself, you're rejecting yourself. You're telling yourself that you're not good enough the way that way you are. You're never going to be good enough. So you completely reject that. You're rejecting it from other people as well.
Where it kind of goes. What personality trait are you the most proud of?
Personality trait. I'm a very loving person. I have people that tell me that I ooze love, like I just ooze it. And I'm a lover of people. I love to love people. I love to care for people. And I just love to make them feel acknowledged, appreciated, and valued in life. Cause that's all that we want, is we always want to be acknowledged for who we are. We always want to be valued and we always want to be, you know, appreciated for the things that we do and the accomplishments we do. So, I've worked in, you know, other businesses and things like that and worked, you know, like for a while I managed a gym. And I made sure that every single person that walked in that, you know, and through the door felt valued, appreciated, acknowledged. And I memorized every single member's name. So when they come in the door, I'd say right away, hey, Joe, how are you doing? Hey, Chris, how's it going? And I would find out about them and I would ask them stories about them, you know, ask them to tell me stories about themselves and find out a little bit about them. So I knew that. So I was always like, always had an intimate connection with all the members because that's just who I am. And I love to get to know people and I love to hear their stories. I'm an oozer of love.
So what trait do you wish you had?
What trait do I wish I had? Probably be more tenacious, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, be a little bit more, more stern, I think. Sometimes I'm very spontaneous. And right. So I'm very like, let's go with the flow. Let's just like do whatever, whenever, and maybe have more structure and more, be stern with different things in my life. Cause I'm just, sometimes I'm like all over the place.
Scattered chaos. I had a photographer friend of mine and he was so cool. It's some clinical thing where he'd be focused stuff and he'd get his studio clean and his creativity was weak. And as the studio moved towards chaos, his creativity got better and better and better.
Oh.
It just got more chaos. And then it would shift to too much chaos and his photography became weak again because it was still better than most people because he was quite an exceptional photographer. So that was the cycle. No chaos, weak photography, chaos builds, suddenly a perfect amount of chaos. Everywhere you could see there was like creativity possibilities, but then just got too much. And his clients would call him up and said, so I just do it like these days. Ah, it's super clean. Come back in a couple of weeks. Cause they knew that his creative moment was when it was just the right amount of chaos to work in. So I love that impression.
That's funny. So
every time my place gets really chaotic, yeah, this is the right amount of chaos to be creative in. Which helps it grow. Do you have any books you're reading right now that are really worth
reading? Yes, I'm actually reading, and it's funny because every time I read a book, my partner's like, you always say the same thing. You know a little bit about it and you already know the thing. So why are you reading it again? So I'm actually reading what is it called? Oh my gosh, why did I just go blank? Basically it's the power of the subconscious mind. Mm-hmm. The power of the subconscious mind. I can't remember the author who writes it, but it was written a while ago and it just talks about how, you know, our conscious mind is the controller of everything. And when we say something, our subconscious takes it as truth.
Yeah.
And we believe it. So we internalize it. And so I started reading it. For one, yes, I do know a lot of the techniques and things like that because I use it in my own coaching, but it's just, I wanted to see if there was anything in there really more of value. And there's a lot of like really cool stories that I never knew of different, you know, he tells a lot about different stories and he kind of uses religion and spirituality, which was kind of different because he talks, you know, a little bit about, he says some Bible scriptures in there. And then he talks about, you know, clairvoyance and clairsentience and, you know, that kind of thing. So the woo-woo, as some people call it. And it's really, really interesting read. And just knowing that like any time that you say something, you know, whether it's negative, positive, or whatever, you know, you're planting those seeds in your brain. So the next time that something like that comes up, your subconscious is going to say, no, no, no. Remember, you told us this, so you have to do this.
Right.
And so it's really fascinating. I'm always like fascinated by the brain and why, you know, when we think those thoughts, like, you know, what comes up for us.
Yeah.
You know, I learned in my NLP that when I was going through my NLP training that some of the behaviors that I took on that I had weren't even my behaviors. I took them on from other people. Mm-hmm. So it made me think, it's like, what other behaviors do other people have that aren't even theirs, but they think that they are, they're their core beliefs, their core values, their limiting beliefs, but they take them on and think that these are my beliefs. These are my behaviors, but they're other people's behaviors. Yeah. And I had two instances where I went through a technique and we were at doing some examples with other members in the classroom. And, I was like, it dawned on me. I was like, oh my gosh. I'm like, that's not even my behavior. That's a behavior of my stepfather that every time he did this, he did, you know, he did X, Y, and Z. And I did the same thing. Every time I do this, it was like, I do the same exact pattern. And I was like, oh my gosh. I'm like, so it was so fascinating to know that like, even if it wasn't even my behavior, I took that on.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
The wild thing that just triggered a thought. There was the army down the States was having a problem. It's a cannon that's attached now these days to a Jeep. And you drive around, then it stops and you fire the motors off and so on, right? And they're trying to get to speed up so they could fire it quicker, but they'd reached a bottleneck and they couldn't figure out why. On theory, it should be able to go twice as fast. So they hired an efficiency expert. He watched them and there's this guy gets up and he primes the gun. And then before he fires it, he turns around, touches the truck and comes back and then fires it. He says, what's that? He says, it's in the manual. Before you fire it, you got to turn around. It could be a lathe on noises, but it's in the manual. And we as soldiers are trained to do what's in the manual step by step, right? Mm-hmm. So we started researching it. Turns out this particular piece was when the cannons were attached to horses. And so they get ready to prime it. So before you fire it, you reach over, you grab the horse's reins, then you'd fire it so the horse couldn't take off, right? So when they revamped the stuff to mobilize, they forgot to take out the part where you grab the reins. And they just, you know, lean back, touch the vehicle because they're just grabbing, touching, whatever kind of stuff. And this had gone from the Civil War all the way through. And no one questioned it because this was what you do. Mm-hmm. And it just that triggering thing where I find a lot of stuff. With this whole, Black Lives Matter and We Too and so on. There's things that you have, like you're saying, that where it's not your habit. This is buried there. I mean, for example, with me, I had a client who was in from the old country. And when I was growing up, the pictures from people, immigrants, were always the same. They were like in heavy coats and they were short, swarthy kind of people. And I never thought much about it. But some of my brain goes, oh, that's what immigrants look like. They're all the same. And someone got in this conversation and she said, well, why do you think that? I go, I don't know. I went back to my thought. She says, well, you see, the people who come over as immigrants, they've lost everything and their eating habits aren't great. So, you know, they don't have good food or good. So they will take on this average bill. But the wealthy and the average people of that country who don't want to leave it, why would they? They look like everybody else. And so we wind up by these photographs, an impression of something that we don't really think about. Like you aren't making a judgment. It's just, as you say, stuff coming in. It's not mm-hmm. really qualified. It's not really, you know, it doesn't mean anything. And all of a sudden you realize that it's now part of you. It's colored your world.
Yep.
Which is neat. So those things kind of, you keep on bumping them occasionally when you go, oh, wait a minute, I don't believe that. Where'd that thought come from?
Yep.
You know, exactly. And yet you're reacting to it, which is really kind of, just really kind of wild. So you're looking forward to becoming Danish again. Again, are you going to leave the Americans behind? You're going to live there permanently? You're going to take your family? Because you have a partner, as I recall, don't
yes.
you?
Yes. I am going to be leaving America. Yes. I mean, I have family here, so obviously yeah. I'll come back
go
and
back
visit.
And forth, yeah.
Right, go back and forth. You know, and I've been going back and forth to there for a long time and just I miss my family. And you know, every time I've gone there and I step off that plane, it's like the second I'm off the plane I feel like I'm at home. And every time I leave I just feel like a part of me stays there. And it's parts of me have been stuck there for a long time. So I want them back. I want them. So I got to go and get them, right?
I had an unusual life because it's been a series of about faces from, you know, kind of growing up and having to face things and say, I don't want this. I want to become this. Giving birth at a young age, find the partner that you found, your nationality. You've had a continuous flow of pretty seismic changes that
really, right.
When you turn around, it's like, oh, look, we're going to adjust course. No, we're going to turn completely around. This will be a 360 thing. And then we're going to take this left-hand corner that kind of goes out that mm-hmm. way. What has been your biggest failure?
I wouldn't say it's necessary. It might be a failure in some people's eyes. Mm-hmm. Part of me it is, but I don't, you know, part of me it is and it's not. You know, because I was raised in such the dynamics of what I was raised in, mm-hmm. You know, me and my sister were like, we took it to the extreme and went the opposite direction. I was like over-loving to our children, especially me. I was like over-loving. I was over-nurturing. I was over this and I was over that. And I, you know, I divorced, you know, my son's dad when he was very young. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, I was like, I needed to not escape, but I needed to find myself and I needed to find who I was. And so I distanced myself, from that. We shared custody and he would bring him up every weekend and I would see him every weekend. But I had this in my mind, I had this mindset that I'm a bad mom. I'm not a good mom because he's not with me full time. Mm-hmm. And it took me a lot of years to get over that, to realize that like every family has different dynamics. Every family is different. In our relationship, I always felt like I was the husband and he was the wife, really. Because for one, the reason why, I mean, there's a lot of other reasons, but it was like, I mean, my child was 11-1 when he was born. So he was a massive, ginormous child. And so I had to have a C-section. And so, there were things that I couldn't do. I was limited. I couldn't, I couldn't walk up the stairs. I couldn't carry him because he was over 10 pounds and you can only carry under 10 pounds. Right. So I couldn't get down on the ground and change his diaper. I didn't change the kid's diaper for like 3 months after he was born. I never changed a diaper until he was like 3 months old. So I never bonded with him. I never had that bond. I didn't breastfeed. I didn't do all those typical things that most moms do. I didn't do any of that stuff. I basically housed this child in my belly and then here you go, So, I wouldn't trade him for the world. He's a wonderful, wonderful human being. I mean, just amazing, smart, intelligent, young man. And I'm proud to say that I'm his mother, but I never really felt like I was a mom mm-hmm. figure, like what the typical mom right. was. And so for a long time, I did feel like I was a failure in that department because of the mindset and how society said that things had to be. Mm-hmm. And it took me a long time to get over that. That was like, this is just the way it was. This is just the dynamics of the relationship. And this is just how it was. And, I need to get over it. It's my problem. Nobody else's, and yes, it's shifted our relationship. And yes, right now we are a little, what's the word? Estranged. Mm-hmm. He's older. He's an adult. He's gone off to college. He's doing his own thing. And I feel like that kind of did kind of put a strain on the relationship. And, but you know what? I'm like, a few years down the road, I have no doubt in my mind that he'll be back in my life and we'll be back in each other's lives again. And just right now, we just need to have that space. Mm-hmm. And I've come to terms with that. And I don't talk about it a lot, just because people give you weird looks and they're like, oh, well, you're the mom. You should be doing this or you should be doing that. And I'm like, but that's not the dynamics of the relationship. And that's not how it worked out. So, I'll always be his mother. I'm always going to be that. And so that will never be taken away from me. And I'm always the one that gave birth to him, I mean.
I find stereotypical things are interesting because they're usually myths, my belief is. Madison Avenue for the sales of marketing and Hollywood for the purpose of stories have created this mythical, typical how things should be, the 1950s yes. kind of deal. And it was never that way. And it's not averages, the medium always bothers me because it's this very thin place. The rest of the world happens outside of it. And, mm-hmm. and so I find when people get trapped in what is expected or what is stereotypical, it usually causes problems because you're trying to work against something that never really existed.
Yep, exactly. So,
well, this has been delightful.
Yes, it has. Yes, very much.
Do you have any final thoughts? Now you've got, you're in a cool relationship, it's a very supportive mm-hmm. kind of thing. You've got, the father that's been recently discovered with your dad, he's Danish. That's the Danish side.
He's Danish. I mean, I've known him we have a very good relationship. I met him again when I was 10 years old. So we've maintained that relationship since I was 10. And he lives, of course, in a whole other country. He does not live in the United States. He actually lives in New Zealand and he likes to play golf all day and play tennis. So that's what he likes to do. So maybe someday I'll yeah. hit New Zealand, but not right now, but maybe later.
Yeah. That's kind of cool. So what parting thought would you like to leave our listeners with, women who are listening?
You know, I do a talk called Making the Mirror Your Friend. And the mirror is like a huge thing for especially women, because we look in the mirror and we nitpick at every single little thing that's wrong with us. We have gray hair, we got to get it dyed. We have wrinkles, we got to get Botox. You know, our nose is crooked, we got to get it fixed. You know, or we have to wear certain makeup or look a certain way or dress a certain way. And so I always do an exercise, and I call it the I love you mirror exercise, where you actually look in the mirror. And when you're coaching with me, it's a little bit longer, but you know, the talk that I do, I give people 2 weeks and I say, okay, I want you to go to the mirror every day in the morning. And I want you to say, I love you to yourself in the mirror. That's a big thing for people, because we say I love you to every single person around us, you know, our spouse, our kids, our people, everybody. We have no problem saying I love you to everybody else but ourselves. Mm-hmm. So to go in the mirror and say I love you and really feel the emotions behind it and feel how it sits in your, you know, where it resonates in your body. You know, do emotions come up? Do you feel angry? Do you feel sad? You know, do you feel happy? And try it for 2 weeks and see if your life doesn't get just a little bit better just from saying 3 words, I love you.
Powerful stuff.
Yes.
Very, very powerful. That's one of the things our photography is about as well, is that people see their images in a way that, the way they don't usually see themselves, and they're surprised and they're excited about it. And they have to admit, cause it's a visual thing. They have to admit, like, mm-hmm. I look really good. Sometimes they say, well, she looks really good. And that is you. Yeah. She looks really, really good. But I don't know if that's me. And it's powerful once you, cause that's the first stage. If you can't love yourself, a friend of mine always talks about the airliner crash. And he says, if an airplane's going down, the first thing they tell you to do is look after yourself. You put the air mask on before you look after your child, anybody else, because you can't help anybody else if you're incapacitated.
Yep, exactly.
So, it's a really graphic type of symbolism that you, mm-hmm. once you're looked after as quickly as it is, you know, just seconds make the difference. You can now step up and help a whole host of people that as a dying version of you, you can't.
I say that to people all the time when I'm talking to them. I'm like, put the oxygen mask of life on yourself first. Put it on you first, because that's what's the first thing they tell you when the plane's going down. Put the mask on you first. Yep, right. I say that every time. I love it.
This is cool. Well, listeners, you'll be able to kind of get in the bio section of this podcast, there's going to be a whole bunch of links and connections to Lisa. And it's been a delight. So
yes,
thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
This has been Fascinating Women with Mark Laurie. Join us on our website and subscribe at fascinatingwomen.ca. Fascinating Women has been sponsored by Inner Spirit Photography of Calgary, Alberta, and is produced in Calgary by Lee Ellis and My Office Media.